We're trying to go back and figure out how can we produce what we do maybe less expensive. As I already mentioned, how can we do it quicker, more efficient? Even a lot of it is through our processes. Like, does a process bring value? If it doesn't, figure out a way to cut it out. That's how you compete in the world today, is being as efficient as you can.
Welcome to the Manufacturing the Future podcast, the show designed to help you future-proof your manufacturing operations. Each episode features interviews with innovative manufacturing leaders and subject matter experts who share their insights and best practices about the technology that can empower you to streamline operations, prepare your organization for what lies ahead, and continue to keep our world turning. I'm your host, Carrie Jordan, Vice President of Product Management at Epicor. Now, for today's episode.
Hi, everyone, and thank you for listening. I'm your host, Carrie Jordan. Welcome to our show where we're talking with business leaders who are driving the future of technology in manufacturing. Today, I'm speaking with Robert Bunting, the president and CEO of Bunting, which is a company leading the way in magnetic energy solutions. They're headquartered in Newton, Kansas. They have locations around the world. And Bunting specializes in manufacturing magnetic separation, metal detection, material handling equipment, and printing cylinders. Now, what attracted me to this story is this impressive legacy. Bunting is family-owned. They're founded in 1959, and they continue to thrive and innovate. They're enhancing production efficiency and safety across industries, and technology is a major factor in this. So really looking forward to this conversation. Robert, thank you so much for joining the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here. I hope the attracting was a good magnet joke pun thrown in there.
Yes, you caught it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, well, let's start by getting to know you. So, you know, you've been with Bunting for nearly two decades. You're carrying on the legacy, of course, of your family-owned business. What is your background and what has your journey been like with the company?
With anyone in a family business, the technical definition of how long you've been involved can definitely differ.
Good point.
Christmas breaks, spring breaks, I was working in the office, cleaning up things. In the high school, even, I was doing some work in the factory and thought I was going to be an engineer, so I was helping in some of our design engineering work. But yeah, officially went to school, took a little bit of a long track, started out at Kansas State University, ended up graduating from a Jesuit school, Rockhurst in Kansas City. Took my time a couple of years at an insurance company, learning what the real world was, you know, away from the family business on purpose. And then took the opportunity. We had an opening here in our facility outside of Chicago in Oak Grove Village, which is near O'Hare Airport. And I have been here since in a variety of roles, from inside sales, outside sales, to product management. And then I ran this facility here that I office out of. And then in October of 23, I rose to president CEO. My father's still the chairman of the board, but it's been a good transition. But like any family business, it's always a little more complicated. The opportunity that I saw when I was younger to be involved in the family business, I thought I wouldn't have anywhere, many other places. And it's definitely been true, but I definitely shoulder the burden of, you know, roughly 250 employees and their family, and making sure that we continue to support them, support the business, and continue to grow.
So much experience. And that's wonderful to hear, you know, that this is such a growing organization, that there are so many employees. Can you tell us a little bit about Bunting, the products that you have, the solutions, maybe some of the manufacturing processes that you follow?
Yeah, we essentially have two sides of our business. We have a lot of the equipment side of the business, and that's made at our facility in Newton, Kansas, and then at our facility in Redditch, England. And then we have a lot of the small magnets in Pennsylvania, Berkhamsted, England, and Oak Grove Village here. We really run them parallel, but really as one company. Kind of the intro you gave on magnetic separation, that's products where you're trying to pull metal out of things that aren't supposed to be. So think of food products, you know, your cereal, making sure a piece of equipment didn't break off. History of the company brings us back to the conveyors. So originally in Detroit, cutting magnets and putting them in conveyors for stamping car bodies. As the industry changed a little bit and evolved into more plastic parts in automotive, that's where we got into plastics and plastic recycling. So much the same, trying to take metal out of something that's not, when it's not supposed to be there. And then we've continued to grow into industries like aggregate minerals and minings through acquiring the company in Redditch in England. And that's allowed us to expand in Europe, into Central, South, and North America.
Interesting.
So really, really a variety of products. Our most recent advancement has been in a magnetic product that assists in printing of aluminum cans. It's been an exciting growth the last 18 months or so. We've added some equipment, added some robotics, added a technical, another physical site. And as we talk Epicor, another site within Epicor. So it's all been very smooth for us to add on through acquisitions and expansions.
Fascinating. I think magnetics, I mean, it's such a fascinating technology. Really cool to hear the innovative ways in which you're leveraging magnetics across the manufacturing process, let alone manufacturing the magnetics themselves. That's really great. All right. So, you know, on the show, we like to explore all types of technologies in manufacturing, especially digital technologies. You know, for example, I understand that you use computer-aided design, you know, to customize products and things. So when did you first embark on a digital transformation? When did you start to look at incorporating digital technologies in the business?
I think there's smaller steps and there's bigger steps. With the variety of the drafting products, I think you can make smaller steps that make a bigger difference over a long run, but you don't always see them. I really have to say when the biggest step technology and efficiency-wise was when we went on to Epicor for us. And because that eliminated a lot of paper steps, that we had an okay product that allowed us to track, you know, past jobs, past products, but managing inventory levels was fairly static. Managing projects as they went through the manufacturing site was really outside of a digital system. So as we grew and became more complex with different sites and more levels of management, I think that allowed us to be more complex versus when you're trying to do things very paper-based, you either have two options and it's to pull everything into one site, physical site, which is difficult now with employment being low, especially in areas like Illinois, Pennsylvania, and Kansas. We have pretty low employment still and have been for a while, but also it allows the management physically of some of those sites to be remote and for us to continue to grow and to look at acquisitions, expansions.
Mm-hmm. You know, when I talk with business leaders, I mean, so many have echoed just what you said there with the labor shortage being really a challenge. Mm-hmm. Have you looked at adding like different types of automation within your business?
Yeah, we definitely continue to try and do as much, you know, whether it's software automation, whether it's process automation, which I think those are the two that sometimes get, you know, overlooked. How can you eliminate a step that doesn't bring value? Because oftentimes over the years, you think that information brings value and sometimes it doesn't. Most recently, being able to physically add robotics to feeding some of our equipment for the equipment that produces the magnetic cylinders for printing those aluminum cans. That's allowed us, we just a few weeks ago did our first test of that product where we were able to run lights out for about 15 hours, which is a big step for us because as you try and be more efficient, you can have, you know, maybe fewer people on site or, you know, set up a product as, you know, you run a first and a second shift with some people there. They go home in the afternoon and then you set up that equipment to run overnight and come back and then you can jump to the next step.
Interesting. So can you tell me a little bit more about that? So by doing the lights out,
yeah.
What did that do for your business?
Efficiency, one of the biggest things is speed to market. So we've been able to take some of those products. The competitive difference is how quickly you can produce. And by having partial or work in progress of a part done, when the order comes to us from the customer, the small parts that are customized are done mainly at the end of the process. So we can have that partially produced unit ready to go sitting on the shelf because we've been able to batch produce those lights out typically. And in the past, we'd have to order came in, make that order. Next order comes in, we make that. Being able to have the work in process ready on the shelves really is a big game changer for us from a competitive nature.
Nice. Can you tell me a little bit more about what types of technologies did you end up investing in when you, you know, were moving to the digital technologies? Certainly you mentioned Epicor.
Yep.
What types of solutions from Epicor and then maybe any others that you've looked to incorporate as well?
Definitely the entire Epicor ERP suite has obviously been very powerful for us. We're in the process of launching the FP&A portion, which has, again, been a big change for us, but a big positive change because we can get better data and much more efficient. In the future, we're looking to continue to build on existing CRM. That definitely, I think, as you start to understand the power of customer data, whether it's predictive or just being able to have that information more readily available. I think customers expect you to know that when they call up and they talk about their product A, they expect you to know all about what they bought. And if they want another one, if they want to change it, if they have a problem. So quickly being able to gather that either from the ERP or the CRM, I feel like is now becoming kind of the standard. All fits into kind of the Amazon effect, really. People's expectation of response time delivery has all been really changed by the behemoth that is Amazon. We've definitely seen that from a customer standpoint, and we also have e-commerce sites for our small magnets where people expect that level of service. And so through the different variety of products, tools, and suites, I think we're doing our best. It's always tough because when those expectations are of a several billion dollar company like Amazon, a mid-sized manufacturing company is always going to be tailing behind a little bit to keep up.
It's hard for sure. And you're right. I mean, there's so many expectations that have been set with people within their personal lives and their professional lives by companies like Amazon. So,
yeah.
Okay. So, you know, given the progress that you've made, you know, by leveraging these technologies, you talked a little bit about, you know, being able to speed time to market, building those efficiencies in your business, being able to launch e-commerce sites and capture online revenue and things. Any other benefits that you'd share? I mean, different kinds of results I'm thinking about, maybe safety, you know, with robotics, certainly in the shop floor, but
those do make a big difference in safety. Yeah. I mean, safety is something that you never either fix or implement day one. It's a process. It's creating consistent expectations, making sure they match the outcomes. So much of safety is to me more planning and less about when you're actually doing it. Because unfortunately, things are going to go wrong, and making sure either people understand what could go wrong so they prevent it, or if it does, that having a proper response to it. We see that in a variety of parts of our business because so much of our equipment is installed at other manufacturing sites. Mm-hmm. It's good because we can often take what you learn at larger scale manufacturing and bring it back to smaller scale.
And a lot of what you're doing in your business supports sustainability. We were chatting earlier about recycling. You know, some of your area of business is supporting recycling.
Right. We've always been pretty heavy in plastic recycling because of our background in plastic production. That's especially important now when you see oil prices rise up because you know, consumers still expect the same type of typically food packaging, also expect to spend about the same amount of money on cars. And in general, plastic, if done right, is recyclable. We also get heavily into metal recycling, which is really great to see because that's a product that process that allows a lot of that product to stay domestic, but also supports a lot of jobs domestically on the recycling side. And is technology-based, which is really exciting to see, you know, more and more. The simple example is a lot of automotive, the recycling cars is one of the heaviest of metal recycling, and the different ways that through the producers and the recyclers, we can recycle more and more of that product. So less and less of it goes to landfill. And we're really excited because we can do some things that with stainless steel and magnets that most people thought was impossible just a few years ago. With very strong magnets, we can actually pull out recycled stainless steel so that it can be reused.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I could see that. I'm just waiting for you to tell me the secrets of how they built the pyramids. I swear, it had to have been with magnets, right?
I can tell you what they weren't using robots.
Well, okay, so speaking of robots, you know, your company having such a legacy of innovation, what's next? What technologies are you looking at now that, you know, you're thinking about could potentially have a big impact on the future for your business?
Goodness. Well, we're at a spot where we're trying to spend a lot of time on efficiencies. And so that's in a lot of the design and product efficiencies, how we purchase equipment. You get to in a life cycle of a company where you can keep doing what you do and you can either hope to stay stable or most companies tend to decline a touch. And so we're trying to go back and figure out how can we produce what we do maybe less expensive. As I already mentioned, how can we do it quicker, more efficient? Even a lot of it is through our processes. Like, does a process bring value? If it doesn't, figure out a way to cut it out. That's how you compete in the world today, is being as efficient as you can. But that's a big focus for us domestically here, especially. We're working really hard right now to expand into Europe. The markets there are really growing and doing well. And while you have a good foundation in the United Kingdom, trying to expand into the mainland, especially after the changes with Brexit, which have been politely a challenge for us with facilities in England.
I think a lot of people can relate to that. But that's great to hear you're looking to expand into Europe. Like you said, I mean, the markets out there are really doing very well. So that's great. Nice. How do you feel about artificial intelligence? You didn't mention it, so I'm curious.
I'm a big fan of it because I look at it as an efficiency metric. I think it's, especially in a lot of the marketing and advertising world, I think it can be really fascinating and efficient. And in a world now where people demand information and data, I think it can help you produce a lot of that. I'm really fascinated to see the way that it can be applied for us in customer service roles. I've seen some really great demos on taking pretty standard manufacturing operation manuals and teaching a privately hosted AI bot to answer questions that a customer might have. I think that's just the tip of the iceberg on how that can be used. It's just another efficiency model. It's another way to gather lots of information quickly and efficiently. I would say we're still catching up, but I think that it's definitely on our radar moving forward.
I mean, that sounds great. I think most business leaders that I talk to are exactly where you are and seeing a lot of really great value and starting to kind of explore the different ways in which it could create value for the business, and especially in the area of efficiency and productivity. And like you said, it is yet another tool that we can leverage. And that means all of the basics apply, right? Security, you know, just as you had mentioned, making sure it's kind of isolated, like a privately hosted one. So it's your data, you know, so that it's secure, so that you can kind of iterate, maybe start small and then continue to expand. So I like that.
I find it interesting. This, at the same type of response is when robotics started to pick up that the robotics were going to take all the jobs and AI is going to take all the jobs. And
here we are.
I like to say the same answers. There's still a lot of people that have to be involved in providing the information, programming, et cetera.
So true. It really does create so much opportunity for many, many people. It's great. Okay. So for other manufacturing business leaders out there, maybe others in family-owned businesses, do you have any advice for them that you've learned along the way?
Along the way, I definitely have learned to be exposed to as much as you can. I've been a part of some peer groups. Nationwide company Vistage, it's been a huge help for me. Either contradictory thoughts or questioning or learning. Don't stay within your bubble. You can learn lots of things from other industries that you may assume are very different than yours. I think you can learn in a lot of different ways, and that's been a good way for me to learn. You can, you know, there's a lot of people that are avid readers. I'm not as much. I'm an okay podcast listener. There's a lot of good information out there that way. So that's why I'm always excited that when these come up, because I'm like, well, somebody did a podcast that I really enjoyed and got benefit out of. I hope I can pass it along. I think for me, so I was born in 1980, and I never know what technical generation that was. For a while, that was, I guess, Generation Y. I don't feel like a Gen Xer, and I'm not a millennial, but
they I've have words for this. Yes. Zennial.
Zennial. Yes. Right.
Or the Oregon Trail generation?
Oregon Trail, yes, yeah. Carmen San Diego, I always say, why not? But it's an example where you can learn a lot, and especially where I'm at, in a lot of, I think, executives close in my age, you can learn a lot from the generations, the boomer generation that's definitely retiring, the Gen Xers that are getting up in age, the different perspectives, and be open to those perspectives of the different generations and different things that people have seen. I think it's a unique opportunity that I've tried to pull in. Just because somebody's young, it doesn't mean they're wrong. And just because somebody's old doesn't mean their information is outdated. It's all about perspective.
So true. So true. And I love that. As many different, you know, informational inputs as you can. And having all of that breadth of perspective really helps, you know, especially when you're tackling new problems. Maybe someone has already approached that in one way.
Or
maybe one way that didn't work. And both of those you can learn from.
And on things that work and things that don't work, I definitely, for somebody who's involved in family business, I will say it is probably the biggest opportunity, but also sometimes the heaviest weight to carry. And again, like, there's people that have been through this that can help you out. Don't carry it on your own. I think I tried to do that for a long time in my career. And as soon as I realized there's other people that have gone through the exact same thing that I have, gosh, it makes you feel a lot more positive for the outlook forward.
Great point. It always comes down to the team and those who you have supporting you.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Some of my staff hate it, but I love to say it. And my goal in a meeting is to be the dumbest person in the room, because I want to have the best, smartest people around me.
Yes. Yes. The key to success.
Yeah. Not all of us can be Elon Musk.
That's right. And shouldn't. All right. Well, this has been wonderful. It's been so, so good to talk with you. You know, as we wrap up, for anyone who wants to learn more about Bunting or maybe connect with you, where would you send them?
Easiest is our website, bunting.com. And that kind of gets us out to the different sites, whether it's on equipment or magnets. And then I'm on pretty active user on LinkedIn, just Robert Bunting Jr. should pop up. From time to time, I'm on Instagram posting really good places to eat. Haven't done so for a while, but I do love a good food, some good food and good restaurant.
I can relate. So that was wonderful. Thank you so much. All right. So that was Robert Bunting. Thank you so much to my guest, Robert Bunting, the president and CEO of Bunting. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
For everyone who's listening in, thank you so much for being a part of the future of manufacturing.
Thank you for listening to Manufacturing the Future, brought to you by Epicor. For the latest episodes, search for the show on your podcast platform of choice. Make sure to subscribe to get notified when a new episode is released. To learn more about Epicor, visit epicor.com.